It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Summer is the most dangerous time of year with children around water. Each year, the number of accidental drowning spikes in July, according to data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
And swimming on the Great Lakes requires extra caution with dangerous currents, powerful winds and waves, and beaches that lack proper water safety measures.
In just a bit, we'll hear from a public safety diver who helps families find closure when a loved one goes missing on a lake.
First, Dave Benjamin is executive director of the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project. It's a nonprofit organization that tracks drowning statistics and advocates for water safety. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me here today.
You have a personal story of how you came to start this project and you're near drowning in Lake Michigan. Can you explain how this evolved into promoting water safety?
Yeah, so I've been swimming in Lake Michigan my entire life. I began surfing Lake Michigan, some 16, 18 years ago. And December 26, 2010, I was winter surfing in Lake Michigan, had a bad wipeout. The leash didn't hold on my surfboard. The leash that is attached to my ankle that keeps me attached to the surfboard. And I got caught by the rock wall in a structural current, and I was in the impact zone of the waves and getting pushed to the bottom and holding my breath, thinking this is going to be it for me. And when I finally just quit fighting to get back up to the surface, and I just accepted that was going to be my fate, I'm wearing a winter wetsuit, which was 6 millimeters thick, which had some buoyancy. And when I quit fighting, I actually just floated back up to the surface. So now I'm at the surface, I can breathe, but I'm still in the impact zone and I'm still in a current. And I'm watching my surfboard get destroyed by the waves throwing it into the rocks. And I was assuming that was going to be me next. So then I, you know, while I'm trying to get my bearings, I could start to strategize an exit strategy to get out of there. Long story short, I knew I had to get away from the break wall. So I was backstroking away from it far enough to where the waves would then wash me back to shore instead of back into the break wall.
How did that experience change you and change your life?
I always assumed that people that drown didn't know how to swim, and that's why they drown. But at that point in time, I was 40 years old, and I had 40 years of swimming in Lake Michigan as well as pools. I lived in Huntington Beach, California for a couple of years and had a lot of experience in the surf out there. You know, I just kind of was suddenly present to, I knew nothing about water safety. And then at the same time, I was a coach in a leadership program and everyone had to do a community project. So I was doing a community project to train surfers how to use their surfboard as a rescue device, because we're often in the water during rough conditions when people may get in trouble. There's a surf shop called Third Coast Surf Shop in New Buffalo, Michigan, and they had an online surfing forum where people could pose questions and then people would answer the questions in a thread. So I started, you know, reading some of the thread, reading about people making rescues, about drowning incidents that were happening. And I just kind of asked who would be the person to teach like a surf rescue clinic. And everyone was pointing to Bob Pratt. So I had a couple of comments back and forth with him on the thread. We had a couple emails. So that's first summer, we ended up doing 5 presentations. The next summer, we did 13. The next summer, another 13. And then we started working with family members of drowning victims where they were raising money for us to go into schools and do presentations. So it went to 32 the next year. But overall, we've now done over 1,300 presentations in 7 of the 8 Great Lakes states.
Wow. Your organization tracks Great Lakes drowning statistics. What is important about keeping track of these numbers?
Well, you have to have data to bring attention to a situation. So prior to us doing this, nobody was tracking all of the drownings that were happening in the Great Lakes. The Coast Guard would track the drownings that they responded to, but they wouldn't share that information from Coast Guard station to Coast Guard station. The National Weather Service was tracking drownings that were happening when there were waves and dangerous currents attributed to the incident, but they weren't tracking all drownings. Because we found that About 25% of all Great Lakes drownings is when there's waves and dangerous currents. The other 75% is, you know, calm days where people just went too far from shore, or they were on an inflatable device that got blown from shore, or they're swimming off of a boat or jumping off of a pier. So really the dangerous currents is like Jaws, the shark, that gets the most attention. But we have a lot more drownings on, like, say, green and yellow flag condition days. Having the statistics to look at who's drowning most, when, where, and why can help us focus our efforts of where we should be spending time, efforts, resources, contacting these beaches to improve their public rescue equipment, improve their beach hazard signage, and strategically place it where it should be near the hazard, to have lifeguards on their beaches. You'd be really, really surprised, but what I just explained is very controversial to some beach cities and state parks.
Why is that?
They don't want to hear it. Drowning is bad for tourism, right? It's like the movie Jaws. You know, they wanted that beach open by the 4th of July so they could have their, you know, holiday tourism come through, right?
I want to look for a moment at children, K-12 education in particular, with water safety. You know, there are fire drills, there's tornado drills, there are active shooter drills. Are there water safety drills, or how are children being taught water safety? What do you see?
They're not being taught water safety. That's just the bottom line. And that's not just like the Great Lakes region, that's nationwide. Right now, Louisiana is the only state that has K-12 water safety education required. And when we look at the national statistics, more school-aged children will likely die drowning each year than die by fires, tornadoes, school shooters, and earthquakes all combined. Drowning is a public health issue, and it continues to be a public health issue, but it's not being treated like a public health issue. It's not being educated like a public health issue. And what we do know is that a water safety school curriculum would be the fastest approach to reach the largest audience in the shortest amount of time that would have the maximum impact, as well as be the most cost-effective measure to take on this drowning epidemic head-on.
Thank you so much for sharing the story, Dave. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
That is Dave Benjamin, executive director of the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project. We've been talking about the group's efforts to track drowning statistics and to advocate for water safety. Now we turn to a Wisconsin group who is there to help when tragedy strikes and someone goes missing in the water. Keith Cormican is a public safety diver from Black River Falls. He started Bruce's Legacy in 2013 with a mission to give families closure by recovering drowning victims. Keith, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You started Bruce's Legacy to honor your brother. Can you tell us about that story?
Well, to start out with, my brother and I guess we got certified back in 1990 to help start a dive team in our county. Main focus was to be involved with the public safety diving. Then, as we were doing things, honestly, without a lot of training in black water and doing things like that, but in 1995, there was a call out for a drowning. A father went missing while kayaking with his three daughters. And ironically, the prior few days before that, we had it was right around 5-6 inches of rain. So it brought the small creek that they were canoeing in into a flooded conditions, and they ran into problems and the father drowned. So at that time, then the fire department gets paged out. You know, it wasn't a diving operation, so the fire department did everything they could on that day, the second day. And then as the days were going on, the water was receding. So on day three, they put together an operation, and not having the greatest understanding of fast moving water, swift water moving, swift water movement of the water, they ran into problems, and my brother passed away that year in 1995. He was 40 years old, wife and two kids, two teenage kids, and that was the beginning of something bad. Mm. It was that following year is when I switched gears in my life and decided to open up a dive shop. My brother and I talked about the need for a dive shop in this area because of the iron mine had closed up, pulled all the equipment out, and left us a giant hole in the ground out here in our county, which filled up, and they made it into a countywide park with a beautiful lake, crystal clear. So I opened up my dive shop and started teaching diving. With my main focus was public safety, to get people trained to know when to say no and have an better understanding of what they're getting themselves into. So that led me for many years getting involved with public safety recoveries over, around the state, and getting involved with training departments. And around 2000, I started learning about all this high-end technology of sonar that were getting very good at locating drowning victims. So it was kind of a dream of mine to be able to do something like that. So it wasn't until 2013 I was able to pull together enough funds to start the nonprofit in memory of my brother, Bruce. So we started Bruce's Legacy in 2013 and bought our sonar, our Towfish type sonar, which is about, well, at that time was about $45,000 sonar. And bought an old pontoon, and we began offering our services free to the families.
This Towfish sonar, so this is a torpedo-shaped sensor towed behind a boat. You're mapping the floor of the lake you're going over and detecting perhaps missing persons or underwater objects. The sonar is giving out pings. Is that how it works?
Yeah, it gives out electronic pings that help identify everything that's laying on the floor of the lakes.
Does this reduce the need for human divers to go into what could be risky situations, risky waters?
Yeah, well, it definitely speeds up the process of searching by many times over. Mm. This thing will cover 100 feet on each side of the boat. A diver could never do that. So definitely it speeds the process up, and then it eliminates putting divers in trying to do these searches. And then, once you locate something, then you have the option of putting divers in, or in our case, after some more time and some more funding, we were able to purchase a underwater robot. And now we just sit on the boat and send the robot down. If it's what we're looking for, we're able to grab a hold of the drowning victims and bring them right to the surface without even getting wet.
Wow. What kind of need have you been seeing for this kind of search and recovery operation and using more high-tech equipment?
Well, it's pretty amazing as far as the need goes. There's definitely a need because there's, drownings every day, multiple drownings every day everywhere. In the summer times, I'm averaging, I'd say 4 to 7 requests a week to help in drownings all over the U.S.
Are these requests coming in from families? Are they coming in from law enforcement agencies?
I would say the majority of them are coming in from families or friends of the family, and then some are coming in from, the law enforcement. I get some, law enforcement will call and just, ask for advice on maybe what they could be doing. So I do a lot of that as well, to just try to help the local authorities to be able to give them some other ideas maybe they haven't tried using yet.
How does that make you feel?
Well, it's definitely, I always tell people, it's certainly one of the most rewarding things I've ever done in my lifetime. Being able to recover these people that are, lost in the water. It's very hard. They're very tough to find in most, a lot of cases. And just to be part of that is certainly very rewarding, to be able to help these people.
You also travel around the country doing training, for law enforcement agencies on search and recovery in lakes. What kind of training is most needed right now?
Well, I do several a year. This will be a big, this has been a busy year, and I got several scheduled out. And so it's extremely important. And the reason is there's a lot of this equipment out there nowadays. You know, there's been a lot of grant money that's, you know, the departments have been able to get into. And so the sad part is there's a lot of equipment out there, but it's frustrating for me because I know there's a lot of equipment out there, but there's, you know, when these departments buy this stuff, sometimes they buy it and then they sometimes they get the training, sometimes they don't. But you know what happens is then they put it on the shelf and don't use it until they get a situation. And this equipment is not the type of equipment that you can just, you know, use it for, you know, every once in a great while. It's you know, there's a lot to learn on everything, the software and all the techniques to provide a good image. So I come in behind a lot of departments that have, I'm being told, oh, they have the exact same equipment. And I'll come in behind them, and sure enough, I'll find them right where they've been looking, and in a lot of cases. I put a lot of hours into this and gotten very good at identifying targets and images underwater. So I don't know, I've been very fortunate that way, but I put a lot of time into it is what I kind of, you know, would credit that towards.
The more you do it, the more you build those abilities to see perhaps what other people can't see in these high-tech images.
Exactly. Yeah.
It must be so devastating for you to see that family on the shore having lost their loved one to drowning. It must feel very heavy. How do you find meaning and purpose when you go on a search and recovery mission?
Well, I guess the driving point is knowing that, you know, we're gonna come there, we're gonna do, you know, we're gonna do our best job possible. We're gonna put long days in. When everybody else has gone home, we're gonna most likely still be on the lake. So we pour our hearts into it, I guess, so to speak. And in most cases, you know, we're kind of the family's last hope, because they've had everybody looking and they've tried everything. And then when we get called in from, especially out of state, they've had several people come in and out. So their roller coaster that they've been on, you know, having new people come in, there's a lot of weight put onto us because they really are expecting us to find them. And unfortunately, I don't find them all. You know, I have 13 years now. This past weekend, we just recovered our 78th drowning victims through Bruce's legacy. So it's yeah, it is very rewarding, but it weighs heavy to do it. But then when you're not successful, oh, that's probably the toughest time I have at dealing with.
Keith, thank you for sharing your story and this difficult work.
Sure, no problem.
Keith Cormican is a public safety diver from Black River Falls. We've been talking about Bruce's legacy, his nonprofit underwater search and recovery organization. Earlier, we heard from Dave Benjamin, executive director of the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project. It's a nonprofit that tracks drowning statistics and advocates for water safety. We've been talking about how to prevent drowning incidents, which peak every year in July.